Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This is FST with Mike Blute and Kevin Walsh. We're going to bring Ryan Talbot in a minute. He is from Bills Updates. We've had him on this show fairly often, certainly a few times a year to talk Bills. You can follow him on Twitter at Ryan Talbot Bills. He's the writer for New York Upstate and Bills Updates. He'll be in here 1 minute. We're having a little bit of a technical issue. But, Kev, I did a draft show which went till all hours of the night just 9 days ago. It was an exhausting but fun process. And we didn't do a show last Saturday. And I know you're kind of bummed you didn't get a chance to react to some of it. Now, things are sort of dissipating as we get into OTAs. I believe the Browns started their OTAs just yesterday. Clearly, other teams are on the docket to get started with their rookie mini camps and the like. So give me your overall reaction before we get to Bill's specific talk when Ryan joins us.
Oh, man. I mean, one of the things we spoke about so much was I was so high on the six quarterbacks, and we broke the record with four in the top 10, and the Saints moved up to 14, and I was like, we are home. We're home, and then they took Marcus Davenport, and it ruined everything. And Lamar ended up just sneaking in that first round at 32, and I think the next quarterback was there. Rudolph was the next one? I don't think he was picked to the third round, right?
Third round, yeah.
So we didn't even see a quarterback going round two. So it ended up being, they still got five within that first round, but it ended up being kind of far off until we even saw the sixth come off the board. I mean, there was a ton of interesting stuff. I was slightly surprised that the Colts never moved back because that opportunity must have been there, but they love Quentin Nelson. I can't knock the pick. The Giants ended up pulling the trigger on Saquon Barkley, and it got to a point where it's like, you know what, we're all doubting this report because we don't think it's a good decision, but because that's the only reason we're having to doubt this, because everybody else is saying it's going to happen, and it happened. And it's been a lot of strange rumors that have come out about them since, where some people said Baker was the top guy. There were some people that said the owners and upper management liked Darnold, but it actually turned out that Schirmer was a fan of Josh Allen. So they've been linked to everybody pretty much but Rosen. Rosen then ended up sliding to 10. We're going to get into the Bills, obviously, as they moved up to 7. They got the Bucs. There were a couple teams that I thought the Packers ended up doing incredible in round one, getting the extra pick from the Saints and taking Jaire Alexander, moving back up to get him at 18. I thought that was awesome. The Browns did some stuff that I feel like they might have made some decisions where I understand the vision, but I don't know if they got necessarily the right guy in all of the spots. So it's been really, really – it was a really, really interesting draft as a whole. So much good stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. So we do have Ryan Talbot now with us. Again, writer at New York Upstate and at Bills Updates. So you can follow him on Twitter at Ryan Talbot Bills. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
So, first things first, obviously, the Bills traded up and got one of the quarterbacks that they were targeting. Is it your estimation that he is the one that they really wanted all along?
You know, I think it was kind of a 1A, 1B situation. I think they like Josh Allen and Sam Darnold a lot. When Darnold didn't go number one, I think maybe they made one last ditch effort to try to get to that number two, but I don't think the Giants were ever really serious about moving out of that spot. You know, one thing that I find really interesting is you can play that what if game. What if the Colts didn't make that trade with the Jets before the draft, so far before the draft, and they waited until draft? And I think they could have had multiple teams offering even more than what they ended up getting in that deal from the Jets, because I think Darnold was number one on a lot of boards. I think he may have been number one on Buffalo's board. But if he was, Josh Allen was definitely the 1B. Those were their top two guys. They like his upside. They like what he can do. I know we've already heard about the weather and the elements and that he can throw through that. But they also like him as the person. When they met with him, they came away very impressed. They think he's very intelligent. And they think that they can work on those accuracy issues by working on his footwork and continuing to work on his footwork, which he did with Jordan Palmer leading up to the draft.
Well, Ryan, right there you mentioned the idea that maybe this is a team, they took the phone call at two, maybe they would have got up to three. I do think one of the really impressive things for this team was that they didn't give up any extra first-round picks in their attempt to get up. So what did you make of kind of the price that they paid to move from 12 to 7?
Well, you know, a lot of people are criticizing that, saying they gave up too much. Who else was going to try to move up there? But at the same time, you don't know if maybe they were competing with a team like the Cardinals, who reportedly wanted Josh Allen over Josh Rosen. So they might have been competing with another team for that actual selection, which I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. So they did have to give up two of their second-round picks. But as you said, no 2019 picks were moved in this deal. No 2019 picks were moved later on in the first round in the Tremaine Edmonds deal. So Brandon Bean has them set up for next year. He got his top two of his top targets that he wanted in the first round, probably a better outcome than he ever could have imagined. And they're sitting there, and yes, they could have found two guys in round two that probably could have come in and competed for playing time or starting time right away. But I just don't think they envisioned they could get Allen at number 12. And then when Edmonds was still on the board at 16, I think they thought, well, we can give up that number 65 pick too, because here's a guy that's going to come in, should be a day one starter. He is versatile. He could play any of the linebacker positions, but I think he's going to replace Preston Brown as the middle linebacker, and he's just going to rack up tackles as a rookie.
Now, Ryan, Josh Allen is polarizing for a number of reasons, but when it comes to the tweets, and we can take whatever our individual reactions may be out of this, I felt that Lorenzo Alexander's, the team's captain's, comments were the most important ones. They weren't controversial, but they were somewhat eye-popping to me, where he basically said, I'm going to be giving him a chance, I hope everybody else does, but I cannot guarantee you that they will, and at some point he is going to have to address the locker room on those tweets. Do you feel that the locker room reaction was taken into account accordingly, and do you think it's something that perhaps is being overlooked here?
You know, maybe it is being overlooked a little bit, but like you said, I like what Lorenzo Alexander said. I think that Josh Allen plans on addressing it with his teammates, and you know, what he said in those tweets were unacceptable, no matter the age. But he was very young. He was very impressionable. The Bills talked to him about every single one of the tweets. They had him break down what he was referring to. Why did he say this? Why did he say that? So he was able to explain them to the Bills. Brandon Bean came away satisfied with that response. So I do think that Josh Allen, though, plans on addressing the team pretty quickly. In fact, once they're all together and letting them know, you know, that he made a mistake, that he's ready to move on, and that hopefully the rest of the team can move on with him, which I anticipate.
So, again, we're with Ryan Talbot. You can find him on Twitter at Ryan Talbot Bills. He's a Bills writer for New York Upstate, and you find him at Bills Updates as well. So, I mean, ultimately, he comes in here. They obviously paid a price for him. I do think the Bills have more of a long-term approach with A.J. McCarron as the bridge quarterback. But do you think that this competition is open going into July, and Allen, with Allen having a shot to unseat McCarron?
Yeah, you know, Bean said that they're not going in anticipating that he's going to start in week one, but they said if he wins the competition, he wins it, and he'll start week one. I think the Bills want to bring him along gradually. They want to work with him a little bit. Ideally, if he were to play as a rookie, I think they'd like to wait until later in the season, maybe after their bye week, which is later on this year. But that all comes down to, one, does A.J. McCarron or even Nathan Peterman win the job in training camp? Two, when they are on the field in the regular season, are the Bills being competitive? Are they actually staying, you know, with these other teams that they're playing against? Or is it a lost cause? Because the Bills are sitting there 0-4, 0-5. Well, at what point do you say, okay, clearly, even though A.J. McCarron or Peterman won the job at training camp, we're not seeing the results on the field, and we want to kind of see what our number one pick here can do. So that's going to be the most interesting thing to me. They're not closing the book on Allen starting week one, but I don't think that's their game plan. I think ideally they'd like to let him wait at least midway through the season and then put him into that lineup when he's very comfortable with the offense, when they've seen him enough in practice to know what he can do with this roster.
Ryan, I'm curious your thoughts on how the dynamic in that quarterback room is going to look, right? Ben Roethlisberger recently just had those somewhat controversial comments in his opinion on the Mason Rudolph pick, basically saying it doesn't help us win now, and I'm sure that is not going to really sit well with Rudolph. It can't make him feel comfortable. This is a situation here where McCarron is not in a spot where he's looking to groom Josh Allen, despite the fact that I think it's quite obvious that's who their future quarterback is going to be. They're going to be battling for this. So do you think it could be a scenario where there's some toxicness there? Is there any concern over how that group could mesh?
No, I don't see that happening. Just because A.J. McCarron has been in that spot where he was in Cincinnati for all those seasons. I think Andy Dalton worked with him, and I think he kind of mentored him. I don't know if maybe he got a fair shake, because Dalton was winning enough games for them to be competitive, to be in that wild card chase, to be in the playoffs, where maybe McCarron never got that shot. But I do think that Dalton was a good mentor to him. And I think that when he meets with Allen, I think that if Allen has any questions, McCarron's not going to hesitate to answer them for him. But yeah, he's a competitive guy. He's not just going to hand the job over by any means. I just don't envision that type of toxic environment or any kind of comments similar to what Roethlisberger said in regards to Mason Rudolph.
You know, it's ironic because Andy Dalton's contract is basically up at the end of this year. I wonder if he had a better chance. If Dalton didn't play well for a month, I wonder if he had a better chance to take over the Bengals job than he does hanging on to the Bills job for any length of time.
Yeah, you know, that is interesting, because they're at that point, too, where, like you said, they can get out of that contract next year. I think there's a lot of jobs on the line, obviously, in Cincinnati this year, so I don't think they would have hesitated to pull Dalton if things weren't going well. But at the end of the day, I guess that he sat on that market long enough, and it wasn't like he was on the market for weeks by any means, but a lot of the quarterback money went so quickly that when Buffalo's offer came in, I think it was the best that he had. So maybe Cincinnati just didn't make that any kind of competitive offer for him. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to follow their season to see what happens, because that could have been a scenario that could have happened this season.
Ryan, let me quickly ask you, just in terms of Edmonds, right, because there's no controversy with that pick. Everybody feels like that was an A-plus home run pick. Were you surprised that they were able to grab him, considering he felt like a top-10 lock as we got closer and closer to that draft?
Yeah, I was very surprised. And when I saw the Bills move up from 22 to 16, that's who I envisioned them going after. I mean, He was by far, in my opinion at least, the best player on the board at that point in time. So it addresses, first of all, it's nice when your draft board matches up with one of your biggest needs, because this wasn't a reach by any means, but inside linebacker, just linebacker in general, was one of Buffalo's biggest needs in this draft. And all of a sudden, arguably the best linebacker in the draft class is sitting there at 16, and you have a team that says, yeah, you know, we're willing to let you move up to this pick to get them. You just give us your number 22 and 65. And I think for Bean, that was a no-brainer. Yes, it would have been nice to have that other pick, again, get a guy that could possibly come in and start up immediately, but you're not going to get an impact player like Tremaine Edmonds, most likely, at number 22. He wasn't going to keep falling. And in fact, there was a report out there saying that the Chargers were ready to pounce on him at number 17. So the Bills did exactly what they needed to do to go out and get that guy.
And Harrison Phillips, that defensive tackle in the third round, is a great addition as well. Some people rumored to see him in the first round. He falls to them, but I think he's a guy that clearly long-term will be a good fit for them. But here's my last question for you. The Bills made a lot of maneuvers this offseason. Obviously, jettisoned three different offensive linemen. Now they have they're resetting at quarterback for the long term. They made the playoffs in McDermott's first year, was probably a surprise to a lot of people. I would argue that, you know what, in the short term, the Bills may not look as good in 2018, maybe not a playoff team, but Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott are building the team in their image, turning over the roster, getting players that they like, and are moving forward in a five-year plan to compete for championships, not just to squeak in at 9-7 to break a streak. So I would contend that maybe they're a little worse in the short term, but long term they're looking okay. Is that a reasonable outlook, or do you think that I'm off base?
No, I think that's a very reasonable outlook. I anticipate them taking a little bit of a step back this year. You know, they did surprise a lot of people last year going 9-7, but now they're going to have a second place schedule to contend with. So it's a very difficult lineup that they play this year in general. They're very young at a lot of areas. Obviously, they're probably going to want to get Josh Allen in at some point. But you look at this roster, like you said, they're building for the future. Josh Allen, if he pans out, they have their first franchise, long-term franchise guy since Jim Kelly. Tremaine Edmonds, I think he makes an immediate impact this year and beyond. Sean McDermott, that is, ends up getting a guy that maybe he's not Keekly, but he's as close to Keekly as maybe you could get in this year's draft class in terms of his athleticism, in terms of that size, speed, ratio, tackling ability. Harrison Phillips, he was referred to as Kyle Williams Jr. I see that happening. I think he'll be the third defensive tackle in that rotation as a rookie, obviously behind Star Lotulelei and Kyle Williams, but I think he's going to see significant reps, and they're going to try to get him built up for 2019 and beyond, because Kyle Williams keeps coming back on these one-year deals, and I think this might be the last one. So you do have to have that plan in place. They took two highly athletic players, defensive backs there, in Taron Johnson and Saran Neal. Neal played linebacker, cornerback, and safety in college. And then Wyatt Teller, I think, could come in and compete for guard, at left guard possibly as a rookie. So definitely building up for this year and for the future.
Good stuff from Ryan Talbot. You can find him on Twitter at Ryan Talbot Bills. Ryan, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again soon. We'll be back to wrap this up on FST next.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Nice. Little Prince, get it going. So we just had Ryan Talbot on. It's good stuff from him, as always. Nice Bills insider talk. Bills writer for at New York Upstate, at Ryan Talbot Bills. Check out all his stuff there to keep getting updated. So, you know, that's the way I had kind of been thinking about the Bills, right? They aren't necessarily looking to go... Look, every team is trying to win the championship every year. They'll tell you that. But I think they came in last year knowing that they had to turn over the roster a lot. I think they're going to struggle on the offensive line this year because they lost three guys. And I'm not in love with their additions at present. They drafted one offensive lineman. I thought they needed more than that. They drafted two wide receivers late in the sixth and seventh rounds. I don't think anybody is really too scared of the Kelvin Benjamin, Zay Jones, Andre Holmes, Jeremy Curley rotation at the moment. Curley's kind of a nice addition, but they're going to need somebody. He'll need to be a slot guy, and they'll need somebody like McCarron to be really accurate. That could be a sneaky play, but I wouldn't be too in on Jeremy Curley, but if he led the team in catches, it wouldn't shock me. It should be Zay Jones, but we'll see. You know, we'll see how that develops, both from a quarterback wide receiver scenario, and Zay Jones as a player at this level. We didn't really see too much of it last year, but you very often have to dismiss rookie wide receivers and their struggles. Most of them do. Most guys don't explode onto the scene in the NFL. There's a lot that goes into it. So anyway, you know, I think they're taking a step back before they take a step forward. There's a lot of young guys on this defense. Kyle Williams, I know, is an older veteran, but they just drafted his replacement. Mm. And then Shaq Lawson, Adolphus Washington, Matt Milano, Tremaine Edmonds, Tre'Davious White, all those guys are starters, and they were all drafted within the last 2 years. So they have Micah Hyde and Vontae Davis and Jordan Poyer and Lorenzo Alexander and Jerry Hughes. So there is some veterans on there, but clearly they're turning this roster over as quickly as they can.
I was reading a lot of Ryan's stuff as we were doing prep work, and one thing that I really like that he does for all his articles, he kind of was taking a lot of the different draft reactions and giving the justification as to pretty much the letter grade that they were giving you. And the common theme, and he mentioned this in a lot of his pieces, it's just it really comes down to what you think of Josh Allen. Like Mel Kiper gave the thing, I think he gave it an A+. And because he loves Josh Allen, he's his top quarterback. I think Pete Prisco of CBS, similar grade. Meanwhile, I think Todd McShay gave it a D because he wasn't as high as Todd McShay. And that's really the theme here is, and at the end of the day, it's actually the reality of this. If Josh Allen turns out to be what people think he is going to be, and it's, you know, what perhaps a better Carson Wentz, I feel maybe, is that what they're projecting the people who love him? Then they win. They win. That's great. And if he ends up to be the bust, they lose. They lose big time. But I will say this, and I do strongly believe this. The biggest win of this draft was the fact that they stole Tremaine Edmonds at 16. I think player plus situation, no better. The second biggest thing, and perhaps maybe the more important thing, they didn't give up that 2019 first round pick.
I agree with that. And I think Harrison Phillips getting him in the third round
is
that was
a nice
win.
Get.
For fantasy players, I play in an IDP league, so I pay pretty close attention to this. We'll have Gary Davenport on. Gary Davenport is somebody we have on here pretty regularly. He writes
Gary's hysterical.
Bleacher Report. Yeah, we'll have him on next week. We'll talk about some of the IDP values of the recent draftees. And I think Tremaine Edmonds is a guy in your dynasty leagues, keeper leagues for IDPs, that you will be targeting, because I think he has an opportunity to put up some big numbers at the middle linebacker position there. He's going to get a lot of reps. He's a young player. He's only 20 years old. And I think he'll have an opportunity to contribute. So we'll take a closer look at that next week. But
can I ask you a quick dynasty
bottom
question
line is, yeah,
about a dynasty
go
guy
ahead.
Just that I saw, because it popped out to me as I was going through just specific landing spots. James Washington really popped out to me in terms of landing spot situation and everything. I feel like that's a guy that people have to be looking at for those who are doing rookie drafts and things of that nature. Not necessarily for a hit away, but the Steelers have constantly
definitely
been creating.
By the way,
big
definitely
time
not right away.
No, but
definitely not right away. But I know exactly what you're saying. You know, Mike Wallace and Antonio Brown, and now Juju
and
Martavis Bryant
took
in fits and starts. And so that's a good transition. Let's talk about the Steelers. And I'm a lifelong Steelers fan, and I think they did fine in the draft. Terrell Edmonds was not a guy that was graded in the first round. So, you know, here's the beauty of the draft. Once the draft is over, can't complain about it anymore. You know what I mean? They did what they needed. The teams all did what they needed to do. We'll all see if they work out. People yelling about Baker and yelling about Lamar Jackson and yelling about all these quarterbacks, it's just up to the teams now to do it. It's what I said on draft night about Sam Darnold. The Jets drafted, gave up a whole bunch and drafted Mark Sanchez high. Then they go and they go to the AFC Championship game in 2009 and 2010, all the while not really developing him. And then when that experiment is over, they draft Geno Smith in the second round and give him absolutely nobody to play with. So the Jets wasted a first-round draft pick, a very high one, which cost them a lot, and a second-round draft pick by doing absolutely nothing to develop the players. We talked about this as a specific topic a few weeks ago with players being brought in and washed – I shouldn't say players, quarterbacks – washing out of the league because they haven't been given the opportunity to succeed. And I just hope that the Jets now have somebody that they feel is going to develop Sam Darnold appropriately, as I feel for all the quarterbacks. You know, it's fun to watch good quarterback play. Nobody wants to see guys wash out and be, you know, RG3 or Johnny Manziel or Brandon Whedon or any of these other names that you want to bring up. So from a Steelers standpoint, I think the James Washington addition is a solid addition. I knew they were going to move on from Martavis Bryant. They did it on draft day. So best to just do that now. He's in the last year of his contract. They got a little bit of something for him, basically the same price that they paid for him to come into the league. So the comments by Ben Roethlisberger, I don't remember if they were yesterday or the day before, where he basically came out and said that I'm playing for 3 or 5 more years. I think that drafting Mason Rudolph in the third round is a wasted pick because he's not taking my job, and I feel bad for the guys in the room, like Landry Jones and Josh Dobbs. So Roethlisberger is the one that has bandied about retirement talk, not the Steelers. I get frustrated. I get frustrated as a Steelers fan because Roethlisberger's great. He's going to the Hall of Fame. I do think in some ways he's actually underrated as a football player, but his off-field stuff is maddening, mainly because he opens his mouth when he doesn't need to. He feels he's a team leader at this point, and you can perceive this in two different ways. He's sticking up for Landry Jones and Josh Dobbs, or he's just kind of blowing up this scenario because he doesn't want people looking over his shoulder. I tend to think it's the latter, although his words suggest the former. So what are your thoughts on it?
Ben Roethlisberger, his, I don't know what the right word is. I guess his approach to the media and just like the way he handles himself, it's somewhat underrated. I think he has like half of Twitter blocked. It's incredibly interesting. Now they do play, the Steelers will play the Jaguars on November 18th, so he'll retire after that game again, and then we'll see if they have to go to Rudolph immediately or if he'll then unretire seemingly the next week. To me, the befuddling thing, and maybe it shouldn't be because of what he did last year, but this is a guy who legitimately talked about, oh, maybe I need to hang it up, and then was like, I never said that, which was a wild thing. And I don't know if he felt incredible after that Jaguars game, because he did put up a ton of points on a top defense in that postseason performance. But
I'll pause for one sec. Sure. I will say that when players talk retirement right after games,
or
right after injuries, you generally have to dismiss it. And so on one of those times, I'll dismiss it for Roethlisberger, but it isn't the lone time he did it. You know, Earl Thomas broke his leg. He was ready to retire 5 minutes later. We've seen this happen. And you know, Gronk talked about it. You give them a little bit of time away from the field to heal up a little bit, then they can rejuvenate and get their energy back.
Absolutely.
But the problem is, it isn't the only time he talked about it.
I remember Argentina lost, I think it was the Copa America to Chile, and like half the team retired. Because Messi retired, and then it was a domino effect. So you do have to kind of let some things simmer. To me, it's really unfortunate, I think, for the Steelers, because when we talk about these teams, right, drafting these quarterbacks and being allowed to learn under the tutelage of guys, the Steelers fit under that mold, right? Like we talked about the Giants grabbing one, the Chargers grabbing one, the Pats, the Saints, and the Steelers. And we said that they'd be able to learn from the current, you know, Hall of Fame caliber guy, perhaps. Those guys might all fit that criteria. And, you know, at some point take over in what is the near future. And listen, whether Big Ben retires next year, 2 years, 5, whatever it is he thinks it is, I do have to think that this is somewhat unsettling and it's somewhat unnerving. And I don't necessarily know if you can count on Big Ben to, you know, take these comments that he's made, be self-aware enough to say, oh, I could see how that'd be unsettling, and then talk to Mason Rudolph and let everything be square. I don't know if you can kind of count on him for that. So that is what makes it unfortunate.
Well, I think Landry Jones is probably the guy that's looking over his shoulder in this scenario.
But who cares? I mean, Landry Jones was never going to be the replacement. And that's just lying to yourself.
Clearly not the replacement. I mean, he just turned 29. years old last month. He has started a total of 5 games. He was definitely replaced in one of those games because he played badly. So he's effectively played 4 games, nothing, very little on the there was a little bit on the line in a couple of those games because it was midseason, but you know, he played an end of the season game a couple of times.
I mean,
so,
but we knew that when they took Dobbs that Landry was never going to be the guy.
That's right. So this is I don't know what their relationship is, but I do think that Roethlisberger could be taking up for Landry Jones in this scenario, protecting a friend, a guy that is scratching out a backup's career in the NFL. Entirely possible. I will also say that Roethlisberger, back to your point about him taking Rudolph under his wing, I read an article this year, brought it up on air last in the fall, about Roethlisberger as a teammate and what he is like. And he is not a warm, open teammate. Mm-hmm. Specifically, Juju Smith said he doesn't really like to talk to rookies. So, and Juju Smith was a rookie at the time.
As a wide receiver, too.
I know.
What are you doing?
I know. Trust me. I know this. And it was maddening to read. And I do think that I have to be fair about it. It's my team, and he's sort of the guy I root for. I don't think he's a great teammate. I don't think he has a reputation as being a good teammate. You could talk to Hines Ward. You can take Juju's comments that weren't even meant to be a pejorative. He was just stating a fact. And I think the totality of it, he opens his mouth about this kind of stuff. He played stuff out in the media with Antonio Brown last year. He's gone through, I think he liked Bruce Arians, and then he didn't. And now he liked Todd Haley, and then he didn't. And he's in the middle of all of this stuff all the time. And I just wonder, is this a contribution to the fact that they can't get back to the Super Bowl for the last 7 seasons? Yeah. I would have argued that the Steelers had the best roster in the league last year going into the season. Mm. Clearly, Philly proved your Philly's. Philly Eagles team proved to be that, and they didn't get it done. You know, whether it's Shazier getting hurt or they're playing a really terrible game against the Jaguars and blowing a game against the Pats, doesn't matter. There is some sort of issue right now with them getting to that next level. It's not easy to do. I'm not saying that they've been a bad organization, but it gets a little frustrating. He is approaching the end of his career, whether he says it or not. The 3 to 5 years thing, I don't get it. He's been injured more than any, Sam Bradford aside, he's been injured as much as any quarterback that's currently playing in the NFL. He's had a myriad of injuries, concussion from not wearing a helmet on a motorcycle accident to a broken noses to knee injuries to all kinds of stuff. He's taken a beating. So he's got more miles on him than the two guys from his own draft class, for example, Eli and Rivers. And people are ready to put Eli in a wheelchair.
You know, I think it is something for us to look at. A lot of times when we talk about the idea of these teams drafting a quarterback and they're going to have to, you know, perhaps sit or learn, is really taking the temperature of the room. Like, clearly, Big Ben is not all too interested, or perhaps, you know, he was told he was going to be mentoring Landry, then it was told he was going to mentor Dobbs, and now he doesn't want to go through this again. Perhaps that's why he's so sour on it, but clearly that's not a great fit. Like, I wouldn't bank on it that Tyrod Taylor and Baker Mayfield hit it off. Now, maybe they will, but Tyrod Taylor is still probably hoping to have a successful NFL career. When you look at Josh McCown for the Jets, has already said, determining success for me will be how many Pro Bowls Sam Darnold makes. You couldn't ask for a better thing. McCown is more than ready to hand that job completely over to Sam Darnold or hold on to it for as long as possible until Darnold is ready. We already heard that.
Josh McCown is also the type of guy, he spent a lot of time as a backup.
Yeah.
He knows his days are numbered. He is the type of guy that could get into coaching. So he has a different outlook, and I think a positive one. I actually don't blame Ben Roethlisberger for saying something along the lines of, like, I'm not giving up this job anytime soon. The 3 to 5 years thing is goofy because you look literally 12 months ago, you're like, I'm not sure if I'm going to do this anymore. So the 3 to 5 years thing is goofy in that sense. But I don't blame him for not being, you know, rolling out the red carpet for Mason Rudolph or Josh Dobbs or Landry Jones back in the day. I mean, they took Landry Jones at a point where they're like, this guy's hurt all the time. We're not sure if he's going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre before him, not everybody's going to be warm and fuzzy. Jason Witten, who just retired. We're going to talk about Jason Witten and the Monday Night Football job when we come back. But Jason Witten, I know for a fact, because I know people that worked in Dallas Cowboys organization, he was not cool to the backup tight ends. That includes Martellus Bennett, Gavin Escobar, and on and on and on. He didn't want people taking his job, and he retired his own way. And we'll just talk after the break whether or not you think it's a good fit. And there is an NFL Hall of Famer that's not happy that Jason Witten got that job. And we'll talk about who that is after the break as well. So that's it. Any last thoughts on the Steelers and Ben?
It's just going to be interesting to see. I am interested to see what happens with James Washington from a fantasy perspective, just because the way they got Juju to pop it. And if Washington turned, there were some people who thought James Washington was the best receiver. So there is a gap there to fill with Martavis. Again, I'm not saying that this is a guy that is definitely needs to be taken in all fantasy drafts, but I'm just interested on field perspective what happens with James Washington. And this Rudolph stuff's interesting too.
Okay, we'll talk about that stuff more too. Go to our poll on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. It's about the Bills. Come back after the break. Talk Kurt Warner and Jason Witten.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Back on Fantasy Sports Today. It's Cinco de Mayo, which wow. I've been reminded of by my producer. It should have been a top priority on this sports show.
Did he give you the whole Cinco de Mayo spiel too?
What do you do to celebrate Cinco de Mayo? Does everybody just go get Coronas and hammer back nachos? That's pretty much it.
I feel like that is mostly what happened. Pete just. I've told you a number of times how I used to troll him on his way back into the intros, and he pretty much just got me with the best one I've heard. He asked me, why do we call it Cinco de Mayo and not Cinco de the 3-0? He's got me all riled up over here now with that one.
Okay. Well, I don't know what that's all about, but you guys can talk about that humorous stuff off air, I suppose. But anyway, enjoy Cinco de Mayo, which is... It's an oddly celebrated holiday, I think, because it was the Battle of Pueblo, is that right? Which was not really a momentous occasion necessarily, but it's enough for people to party and all good stuff. So I'm sure people in Manhattan will be partying it up. I'll be on a soccer field in about 2 hours. So that's where my life's at, Kev.
That's okay. I like soccer.
I might have some Coronas, though. I'm not going to lie. I like a Corona.
Not ruling
or
it out.
I don't love Corona. It's not my favorite Mexican beer. I'm more of a Dos Equis guy or a Negra Modelo. That's delicious. So, anyway, enough about Mexican beer talk. Happy Cinco de Mayo. So, where were we? We were talking Steelers. I was talking Jason Witten and Kurt Warner.
Yeah.
You know, we should talk dynasty players, though. I will before. So the Kurt Warner, Jason Witten thing is about Monday Night Football. Let me put that to the side for a second. But as far as dynasty players are concerned, I actually am starting my dynasty draft on Monday. It's a slow draft.
Ooh.
It is an IDP league. It is a 45-man roster. Five of those are rookie-only practice squad. The other 40 it's IDPs. We start 11 IDP players each week. We start 9 offensive players. It's a really difficult roster to manage, obviously. I've had a lot of success in that league, but last year I won it twice in the first 5 years. But last year didn't go well, missed the playoffs for the first time, and I'm kind of building back up. I have like the 8th pick, and I need an offensive weapon. So I'm going to be looking at guys. I don't think James Washington will be my first pick, but I'm not going to get the running backs. Those fly off the boards because the league is so deep. It's 16 teams in each conference.
Wow.
There is nothing left as far as running backs and wide receivers are concerned once the season starts. People just, you know, outbid each other and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see. You know, it should be interesting to see kind of where who I'm going to get in this draft. I think there could be a defensive player or two taken in front of me, so I'm really just hoping for. And I'm at a point where I might need to do like a reset, like where the literally where the Chargers are. My quarterbacks right now in that dynasty league are Phillip Rivers and Blake Bortles.
Oh wow.
And Rivers a year older, obviously, and Bortles, I don't know if he's had got the job in 2019, so I have to consider that. At least as somebody to put on a practice squad for the year. But I don't know who the heck I would pick. Honestly, from a fantasy standpoint, to look at the teams that drafted quarterbacks. The Browns, the Jets, the Bills. Like we're not the Ravens. It's Arnold, not exactly teams that have been lighting it up offensively, and the Cardinals, who, you know, some people are gonna argue that they have a really tough roster. I do think there's some upside for Rosen. He'd probably be the guy that I would go after. But I'm probably going to be trying to target a wide receiver or a running back, and I'll probably miss out on Saquon and Penny and who else.
So I was looking at the running backs, and the extreme number. I think there could be six RB1s on depth charts, not RB1 fantasy, RB1 on a depth chart. Possibly six from this draft. If I think I remember correctly, it was, as I go through
Barkley and Penny.
Barkley, Penny, Dice for the Redskins, Ronald Jones for the Bucks, Tampa. Royce Freeman for the Broncos, and Hines, the NC State back, who got picked by the Colts.
Yeah, he'll battle out with Marlon Mack. I think Mack's got a shot there. Nick Chubb probably won't get the number one job in its entirety.
Right.
Same with Sony Michel, who they're always
Sony,
sort of a running.
Sony.
They're a running back.
I don't think Chubb could be RB1 on the depth chart. I don't.
Michel could be, but it doesn't. It's in name only. It doesn't really matter.
So
you know there are times when the Pats start a guy and then he barely plays the rest of the game. So Michel is going to be part of a running back committee. Not that he can't be productive, but he's going to be part of a committee. He could do a lot of work and not get touchdowns. It could be like a Deion Lewis type role.
I'm just wondering if he's Deion Lewis with more consistent touches. Because I feel like if they were willing to take him at 31, they might be willing to give him the ball more. And he is a dynamic playmaker. So I'm just curious. Because that was, I feel like, always the thing that we've always talked about with this Patriots running backs. Only if there was one guy who can get more consistent touches. And he absolutely could get touchdown vultured. But if he has enough touches, I'm curious if he could be Deion Lewis with the workload that perhaps a Deion Lewis deserved.
You got to love the Pats planting those Sonny Michel bone-on-bone knee stories. That was straight up smokescreens by the Pats. The guys releasing those stories are like friends of the program in New England. So that's kind of funny stuff. But I don't blame them. I'm not criticizing them. That's all fair game. But, so there you go. There's your running backs. I'll try to get one of those guys, though. I will never feel comfortable about taking a Pats running back. Ronald Jones will probably go and Geis will probably go, but Freeman and Hines, I probably won't prioritize that. I have the 8th pick. Keep this in mind out of 16. Let me just double check it. Actually, I'll double check it during the, while you're talking, but as far as wide receivers are concerned, I don't want DJ Moore. Calvin Ridley would be interesting to me. Cortland Sutton would be interesting, but man, that's a project.
Why are you out on DJ Moore?
I don't think that DJ Moore, certainly this year, he'll be like their fourth option, right?
Really?
Because you got McCaffrey, offensive option.
Oh, okay, McCaffrey then, yeah.
You got McCaffrey, pass catcher.
Sure,
pass catching target. You have Funchess and McCaffrey and
Olsen.
Olsen. And Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore will be battling it out for the fourth spot.
I think Samuel's
part
of the pass.
Could be, but DJ Moore is fourth at best in my estimation.
I think coming into the year, I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, if he had more receiving yards than Funchess and McCaffrey, that wouldn't shock me at all. McCaffrey's
that would
gonna
surprise
get a,
me.
McCaffrey's going to get a ton of catches. But the if a lot of the stuff's coming out of the backfield, I think DJ Moore could be their legitimate number one receiver. His skill set is incredibly different to what Funchess is bringing to the table, I would say. So
Christian Kirk is interesting to me.
Yeah.
In Arizona, because he'll get a chance to play a lot. Deshaun Hamilton and Cortland Sutton both in Denver. Like, is that the two guys replacing Sanders and Demaryius Thomas in two seasons? Antonio Callaway, obviously off-field stuff there, but people expect him to be super talented. Anyway, we're getting into later rounds of dynasty drafts. I just think that...
What'd you think of the tight ends?
Tight ends... I mean, am I sold on anybody as being like a big offensive threat? Like Hayden Hurst will have an opportunity. Gesicki will have an opportunity, but you don't even know who Gesicki's quarterback is going to be 12 months from now. Goddard in Philly is a nice addition for them. I think that's perfect for him, but Zach Ertz is the primary target there, obviously. I don't know that Mark Andrews is a primary pass catcher, and I think that would be more Hurst than it would be Andrews. So nobody jumps out to me as a big threat. Plus, I'm pretty good at tight end. So anyway, I will update you guys on that next week. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'll have some realistic expectation for you guys.
I'd love to get into that.
I'll forward it over to you when it gets started. There's no doubt in my mind that Saquon will go.
We'll talk after. It doesn't matter who's drafting. Right.
And Penny will go. Probably right after that.
You take Penny over Geis? I wouldn't.
Maybe not. That's a good question.
I think I'd take Michelle over Penny. I hate that offensive line.
It's terrible. It was terrible. It's getting better. They have Dwayne Brown. They have Justin Britt. They have Ethan Posich, who they drafted last year. Mm-hmm. So that's three guys in place. They need to do some more work there. I don't think Penny's going to be great this season, but I think he'll have an opportunity to start as they get back to how they were when they won a few years ago. So I think that's what you have to think about long term. With Washington, they've had a few backs come in here, be moderately successful. They do well in the power running game. They don't do well in the intermediate running game, meaning Washington's pretty good on short distance running, but not so much on breaking longer runs, intermediate running.
Yeah.
Pass blocking. They have some players in there. They kept Kirk Cousins mostly clean in the past. We'll see if they can do the same for Alex Smith. So anyway, let's put a bow on that. Want to talk about the Witten Warner thing, because I thought it was an interesting story. First of all, Jason Witten, you never have any here. The one thing I always say about sports fans is the one thing you can't get a consensus on from sports fans is announcers. The guys I love, I know people hate. And the guys that I don't love so much, I know people love. People always think that guys are homers. Somebody might like me on the radio. Somebody might hate me on the radio. Same for you. It's okay.
I'm really comfortable
with it. I do think Romo's really good. People probably got a little bit over their skis complimenting him, but I do think he's really good. I think he adds a nice dynamic to the booth that you don't always get from people. Guys kind of predicting plays and that type of stuff. He isn't the only one that can do it, but I did like his energy, and I thought that was an interesting thing to add to the booth. Yes.
He predicted like 8 things pre-snap. It was just, of course some of it would hit. I don't know. He started to drive me crazy. A part of it was the fanfare. Like, a part of it was people acting as if Tony Romo's brain was a gift from the football gods. Like, that was driving me insane. But it was the fact that he didn't, for lack of a better way to put it, he didn't shut up. Like, I've called games. Have you called games before? I don't know your past. I feel like you must have called some games before.
No, not a play-by-play guy.
No?
Always something that I want to kind of dip my toe into the water of, but I didn't get a chance to do much of it.
So I did a ton of play-by-play in color back in college and things like that, and it's so frustrating when the guy next to you won't shut up. Now, I've never really had that from the guy in the color seat. I once worked color with a guy who did play-by-play, and it was a video broadcast, and he was talking through the free throws, like describing it, like dribble, dribble, spin, shot. I almost laughed. I was losing my mind.
Well, he was doing a radio call on TV.
But even on radio, you don't go dribble, dribble, spin. Anyway, it's just Tony Romo. It just felt like the sound effects did somewhat make me laugh that he would do. And he's enthusiastic, which I always appreciate. I always appreciate when someone seems like they really, really want to be there. And when they're having fun, I think that that comes through. But I do. I felt like the fanfare started to kind of drive me insane. Nevertheless,
I mean, the one thing that drove me the most nuts with those two, with him and Nance, was literally the low light of the entire Steelers season was the Jesse James touchdown getting called back. I guess you could argue that the loss to the Jaguars was an even bigger low light. But when they called the Jesse James thing a touchdown and it's being reviewed and reviewed and reviewed, and after the 10th time it was reviewed, a light bulb then went off like, oh, I guess they think maybe he didn't catch it. And then they like jumped on the bandwagon of like, yeah, it moved. It's not a catch. And that was the moment at which I was just sort of done with the catch rule. I'd been done with it long before then, but I remember then hemming and hawing over it. Anyway, we only got a couple of minutes. Jason Witten's going to step into the booth. You like him? And I'll tell you about Kurt Warner, why he's upset.
I have no idea how Jason Witten is going to be, and I don't understand how they're willing to give this money to these guys. Like, one of the things that Romo, I think, made clear is, like, if you get a quarterback fresh off retirement, a lot of this stuff is so fresh in their mind and that the game has not passed them by that they can kind of do a seamless transition. And not to say that tight end doesn't have a similar thing, right? But we also know that quarterbacks normally have to be vocal and things of that nature, so it does seem like it's somewhat of a translatable skill set. But I don't know how people are so willing to throw all of this money at these guys without ever giving them a run through to see. Like, I don't understand why they don't.
No, I think they had like Romo in the booth doing sample games and doing tests and stuff like that. I think that's why
he didn't do
these
that
guys get offered.
Romo they didn't absolutely do, he auditioned?
Yes. 100%. They have to take them through games in order to make sure they know what they're doing. Now, it still could have been premature, but I know that they do work with those guys to make sure that they can get it done.
I know they do prep, and I know they do practices, but I'm talking about before they get the offer, them auditioning for the position. I don't know if that happens. I don't know if Jason...
I bet they did it. I bet they went through it at least a couple of times, even if it's not formal, if it's just sort of like, hey, if you're thinking about this, why don't you come by ESPN's campus and we'll see if this works out. Now, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I heard that about Romo, that they took him through some sample games to see how he could do, and he was a natural. He got it right away. So let me talk about the Kurt Warner thing, because this is what I wanted to get to. Kurt Warner tweet posted late Wednesday afternoon. I remember the days growing up believing the best person in caps for the job, not race, not gender, not age, not pedigree, led to gaining position, .. trying to figure out if it ever truly, in all caps, applied, thinking I was just a naive kid. But if so, how did we get so backwards? It appears to be in response to him learning that he wasn't getting the ESPN job and that Witten was going to take it. Warner was considered, who works on the NFL Network now, was considered to be a favorite. Not so much when it came to Jason Witten getting the job over him. You know, obviously Romo had some success. Warner is a relatively recent retiree. Oh, look, he's in the Hall of Fame. He's been out 5 years now, 6 years now. So, I don't know. Look, we never know. Like I said, we never know how these guys are going to be. But do you think Warner has a right to be upset and taking shots and all that kind of stuff?
I mean, yeah, if he wanted the job and he feels, I mean, because he probably feels like he's been in TV now for a while. And Witten, I bet you there are people who feel like Witten is simply getting this job based off the, how successful Tony Romo is. I bet you that is a sentiment around the feeling of him getting this
job. And the fact that he played, and the fact that he was a Cowboy.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, he comes with a pedigree. They saw Romo do it somewhat seamlessly. And I bet you that was a big reason that they took him. I wish that Lewis Riddick got the job. I think he's excellent.
He's great. 15 years in the league, Witten never played in a conference championship game. Crazy. Says a lot about where the Cowboys are at. So, all right, we'll come back. It's Mike and Kev. We're going to come back. We're going to talk NBA.